Well, thank you, Randy, and welcome to the Bright Angel Church if you're visiting with us. Please locate in the Word of God, James chapter 1, verse 19. We're going to look at that passage on a number of occasions as we proceed through the lesson, so just hold that open in your lap if you would. This is the sixth and final series in the Family Foundations series, so we're going to bring our sermons on marriage and the family to a conclusion today, and we're going to bring it to a conclusion by talking about communication and conflict. I'm a little apprehensive here because I want to reveal to you something from my past, and I don't know if how you'll take it, but you know, Jeanette and I, when we were first married years ago, she wanted me to see a counselor because of our marriage, and so her and I, she finally drug me to the counselor, and so we were in the counselor's office, and the counselor, after talking with Jeanette a little bit, turned to me and said, J.B., I understand there's a problem in your marriage, and I said, well, Jeanette's got a problem, and I don't have a problem. Any of you ladies ever hear that before? But I said, there is a problem in my marriage. It's not me, but it's her. She goes around the house all day talking to herself. And the counselor became concerned. He said, well, maybe there is a problem with Jeanette. And so he kind of leaned in to me and looked at me, and he said, well, do you think she imagines she's talking to someone? And I said, yeah, she thinks she's talking to me, but I don't listen to a word she says. I hope now you don't think less of me after revealing that to you. But that's the way it is in communication, isn't it? And a lot of times, you know, men think differently. Men and women are different, and so men do communicate differently from women, brothers. Now, someone said communication is the key to your marriage. It may not be the key, but it is a key to a successful relationship. I believe it's easier to communicate among men and among women than it is between men and women because of gender differences. I believe men just see things differently, and so there is a bridge that you kind of have to cross to communicate effectively. So what are we talking about? Communication occurs when we express our feelings and beliefs in such a way that our intended message is received and understood. Now, I put that on the PowerPoint because I want you to look at that and I want you to absorb that. Communication occurs when we express our feelings and beliefs in such a way that our intended message is received and understood. Effective communication is more difficult than most people think. What we actually say, in fact, may not be what we intend to say. Or what people hear us say may not be what we have actually said. That's why communication is different. Perhaps this is why the Bible says what it says in James chapter 1 and verse 19, when the Bible says, everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. So the Bible is telling us that we should be careful about how we communicate. Now, the Lord has given us two ears, but only one mouth. Have you ever wondered about that? Maybe it's because our mouths get us in more trouble than our ears do. And when it comes to communication, we need two ears. We need to listen twice as hard as we speak, because communication is so important. Sometimes it is hard for husbands and wives to communicate because men and women are so different, and the difference sometimes causes us to think and communicate differently. It's sort of like the young man and his fiancée were sitting on the porch along an old country road on a late July evening as they listened to the noise in that rural valley where she lived. It was on her front porch. And they were sitting there swinging in the swing, and they were holding hands and just treasuring the moments. And they were listening to the sounds. And the man listened to the little crickets chirping in the weeds near the porch on that July evening. And the woman was listening to the music that came from an old country church just down the road as it echoed down the valley. Amazing grace, the church was singing. And she said to her fiancé, isn't that just the most beautiful sound you've ever heard? And he said, well, you know it is, and they say they make that noise by rubbing their hind legs together. Now, he may have been thinking about getting those crickets and going fishing, but she was thinking about the church and that wonderful music. Communication is different, and the point is that there's a difference between men and women in the way they perceive things, and so we need to be careful. Note that James says in this passage that we are to be quick to listen and slow to speak. There is a difference going on. We need to be quick to listen. Just because we love someone does not mean that there will never be any conflicts in our relationship. Conflict is not always avoidable, even with those that we love. Now, Paul said in Romans 12 and verse 18, if it is possible as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. But we know that sometimes it is not possible, is it not, church? Even in a marriage relationship, it may not be possible to always be peaceable or peaceful in that relationship. And there may be some conflict. And I think the apostle is talking generally here, but I believe this would also include romantic relationships. We can never eliminate conflict because we cannot eliminate what people do. And we cannot control other people always. So although we should recognize our responsibility in bringing about peace, some conflict, in fact, may be inevitable because of the attitudes and behaviors of others. So I think what James is really saying here is that to avoid conflict, we need to think before we speak. And to effectively communicate, we need to think before we speak. I believe James is telling us that it is important. There are three things: quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry. Now let us consider why it is so important to do these things in the context of our marriages. And I most think most of you here today are married. And those that aren't married, you may be planning on getting married. Or you may remember the marriage that you had. You may have lost a spouse. And so what we're talking about, even though it may not affect you directly, if you're right now you're not married, it may help you to communicate to others about the importance of what we're talking about in the marriage relationship, because you'll have children and grandchildren that need to know these things as well. And if you're not married yet, you need to think about these things before you do get married. And I wish that when I was a young man that I would have had an old-time preacher to talk about this to me, because nobody did. And so I wasn't a real good communicator when I was young. I would do things like I'd ask Jeanette silly questions. I'd ask her, I'd just say, "Well, Jeanette, I don't understand. How could you be so dumb and yet so beautiful? You don't say that to somebody that you love. How could you be so dumb and yet so beautiful?" And then she told me. She said, "Well, God made me beautiful so that you would be attracted to me. And he made me dumb so that I would be attractive to you." So sometimes that's the way it happens. But we need to realize, though, that we can destroy effective communication. Proverbs 15, verse 18, a hot-tempered person stirs up conflict, but the one who is patient calms a quarrel. And then in verse 1 he says, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs anger. So if we know something about the Bible, then that will help us to avoid conflict. For example, the harsh words that stir wrath, we can avoid those. We can learn to do that. We can learn to practice the gentle answer that turns away wrath. So there is what you mean to say versus what you actually say in a relationship. And also there is what the other person hears versus what the other person thinks that he or she actually hears you say. And then there's the response to some kinds of communication, different kinds of communication. There is what the other person says about what you said versus what you think the other person said about what you said. So it can get real complicated. So we need to be careful. That's why the Bible says that we need to be swift to hear and slow to speak. So when we do have conflict, then how can we manage that conflict? Well, we need to know the difference between compromise and appeasement is one thing. You know, we don't need to have dictators in marriage. And I think men tend to be or try to play the role of dictator more than women tend to, but nevertheless, the women can play this role as well. We don't need to say things like, well, you better listen to me on this, or you must do this, or I'm going to be unhappy, or you'll live to regret it. Dictators love appeasement. But in marriage, we need to learn how to compromise. Now, what is the difference? Now, if Jeanette and I want to have a vacation, I want to go to the seashore and she wants to go to the mountains, so we compromise and what? Go to the mountains. No, that's not what I'm talking about. That's not what a compromise is. That's not what we're talking about. You know, a compromise is learning to give, not always getting your way and being the dictator. Although conflicts are an unpleasant experience, did you know that God may actually work something good out of that experience? So just think about it. If you had sort of a knockdown drag out in your marriage and a fight and you're upset, you know, it's possible if you work it right that something good and positive can come out of that experience. In other words, a conflict may actually be beneficial when we are able to work through it and learn from that experience. For example, we could gain insight into how to improve our relationship in the marriage. We may actually make relationships stronger by addressing, maybe and clarifying, some things that are unresolved problems in that relationship. So it is possible then for something good to come out of something bad. And doesn't the Bible really say something about that? I believe it does, doesn't it? Doesn't Paul say, and we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love Him, Romans 8, verse 28. And when I was growing up, the preachers used to quote the King James Version, which is a little misleading. I think the NIV does a better job here, because not all things that happen to us are good. And that's kind of the impression the King James translation gave of that. But I think what the point is of that text, Paul is saying, is that in all things, including bad things that happen to us, God can bring some good out of it. And some good can come from it. Not that it was good that it happened to us, because it may be something very, very bad, in fact. So to manage conflict, we need to learn how to gain insight into how to improve relationships when there is a conflict. It is important to resolve conflicts in relationships because they can negatively affect other aspects of our lives. And being a preacher, I'm very concerned about the negative impact that conflict will have on your relationship with God. There are two passages of Scripture that really tell us about this, and that we need to really pay some attention to. In Matthew chapter 5, Jesus said this: therefore, if you're offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift. So he pictures a situation here where there are two friends, and there's a conflict. There's an issue that separates them. And he says, before you worship, try to get that straightened out. And have we not seen that in churches before? And I've worked with churches that were plagued with the conflict in the church. And it negatively affects the worship. Now, specifically with reference to marriage, there's a passage in 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 7 that talks about this. I've mentioned this before in classes and elsewhere, because it's a point that never really dawned on me, because nobody pointed it out until I just suddenly one day realized that's what Peter is saying. And the Bible will do that to you. If you read it long enough, you'll soon learn insights that you never imagined before. But listen carefully. He says, "Husbands, in the same way, be considerate as you live with your wives and treat them with respect as the weaker partner and as heirs with you in that gracious gift of life." But it doesn't stop there. It goes on and it finishes this way. "So that nothing," he's saying to the men now, "so that nothing will hinder your prayers." Now, there are some rules, some good common sense rules for avoiding a conflict. Number one, and the first of that rule, and you might want to write this down, is to treat the other person with respect. These rules can help us increase intimacy in our marriages and make that relationship so much closer than it would be if we don't follow these rules. These are communication rules, and they are effective. They are practical, common sense rules, church. Treat the other person with respect. Now, the idea of treating others with respect actually is a biblical idea. For example, in the law of Moses, God says, "Do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against one of your people, but love your neighbor as yourself." Leviticus 19 and verse 18. Jesus says, "Do unto others as you would have them do unto you." Luke 6 and verse 31. I cannot think of better advice given to a young couple getting married than the golden rule. If a man and a woman will practice what Jesus said in the golden rule, their marriage will be better. Can you imagine how good a marriage could be if the husband does to the wife, "Do unto others as you would have them do unto you," and the wife does to the husband as she would like to be treated, and he does to her as he would like to be treated? It will make a big difference. Every issue, every conflict, every decision that has to be made in that family is made from the perspective of the golden rule, "Do unto others as you would have them do unto you." That is not some just simple formulation or simplistic formulation that's come out of the mind of man. That's the words of wisdom coming from Jesus Christ. And it applies universally to all of our conflicts and situations and relationships. And it is good wisdom. And we should apply it. We need to treat the other person, always treat the other person, with respect. These passages show us that we should treat others with respect. Paul says, "Honor one another above yourselves," Romans 12 and verse 10. But what if we don't like the other person? What if we don't like the other person? Do you remember last Sunday's sermon, and I pointed out, you know, there's a thin line between love and hate? If you didn't hear that, you need to go to my website and try to look that sermon up and listen to it. But there's a thin line between love. And sometimes, and we gave the example of Tamar and that fella. What was his name? But anyway, this example of this young couple in the Old Testament. And he began to hate her as much as he loved her. So sometimes, even in a marriage relationship, it's possible to learn to hate someone. Because we love them, and there's sort of a thin line there, and we can go back and forth. So even if you don't like someone, you still need to treat them with respect. And the Bible does not exempt us from this obligation just because it is difficult to do. And just because we don't like the person, or it's inconvenient to do. Number two, we need to listen until you experience the other side. Now, to listen until you experience the other side is actually called active listening in the counseling profession, but it's a biblical principle. This means that we must first see things from the other person's point of view. And I would remind you the difference between empathy and sympathy. And sometimes it's hard to know the difference. But, you know, I was always taught that sympathy is when you feel sorry for someone, and empathy is when you feel sorry with someone. But empathy is really being able to feel as the other person feels. Sometimes that is not possible to do. If you have experienced the death of a spouse, for example, well, I cannot empathize with you. I've never experienced that. And I may think of ways and things that you're going through about the terrible loss and things, but I don't know exactly what you're experiencing. And so I can never empathize with you to the extent that you never know exactly how you feel. We always need to recognize that when somebody's experienced some kind of a loss or setback in life, we need to respect the fact that maybe we can never really appreciate this. And sometimes I tell people that, and when I visit them as an elder of the church or as a minister of the church, and I say, you know, I don't have the words to express my sorrow for your situation because I have never been through this, and I can't say to you I know what you're going through because I don't. But you know, may you seek advice and help and counsel from the Lord, and may you seek comfort from God in this period of tragedy in your own life. But that's what empathy is learning how to feel the other and see the other person's point of view. Now, we don't have to agree with the other person's point of view if it's in an argument, for example, but at least we need to know how they feel about it and what point they're making in the discussion. So if you have an argument with your wife, men, you don't necessarily have to agree with her in order just at least to appreciate her viewpoint and perspective. That's what's called active listening, or experiencing the other side before in an argument, and being able to do that. And then the third principle in resolving conflict is to state your views, needs, and feelings. And everyone has the right to be heard, and love allows us to be assertive in these relationships. But to be assertive means simply that we let others know how we feel and what our views are and what our needs are and so forth. And you have a right to do that. And let's talk about that just a minute. Your rights in a relationship, your right to say no to a request without feeling guilty. You should never feel guilty because you say no. Now, you don't have a right to get upset about being asked about something. If your husband, ladies, if your husband asks you, says, honey, can we buy a bass boat? You don't need to get offended at that. But you can kindly say, in a loving way, you can say no. We're not going to do that. Or, you know, same thing with the wives, you know, and asking the husband something. And whatever question, you have a right, though, to ask that. And the other person, you should not get upset that they're asking, well, how dare you ask that you buy a houseboat or a bass boat and go off on the lake and fritter away your time. And how dare you do that when the money's tight and so forth. You see, that's causing conflict. But you do have a right to say, no, I love you and you're a good husband and a good provider, but I just don't really think we need to do that, and I don't want to do that, and we're not going to do that. Something like that. You have the right not to give a reason for every action that you take. If you feel like doing something and you want to do something, you have a right to do it without having to explain to everybody what you're doing. And so I think husbands and wives need to allow a little breathing room here. And, you know, I don't expect Jeanette to explain to me in detail everything she wants to do. If she wants to go out and water the rocks a little in our yard, well, she can do that. You have a right to ask other people to listen to you and to expect them to hear your point of view. But you don't have a right to expect them to agree with you, but you do have a right to expect them to listen to you and to your arguments. You have a right to change your mind if it happens to change. You have a right to ask others to compromise once in a while rather than having them get only what they want in the relationship. So the husband needs to make some compromises and the wife needs to make some compromises once in a while. And you have a right to expect that in a marriage relationship, men and women. You have a right to maintain your dignity in the marriage. You don't need to be humiliated or debased or denigrated in some way or made to feel unimportant in some way. And your spouse does not have the right to make you feel that way. So you have a right to maintain your dignity in that relationship. And finally, you have a right to be treated with respect. Now, sometimes people do not want to hear your views, needs, and feelings, or they may not want to recognize your rights in that relationship. They may make demands in that relationship. Well, you need to do this, and you're supposed to do this. And sometimes you need to say no in a loving way. Even when our love is reciprocated, negative events can be very, very disappointing. And so then we need to prepare ourselves for those negative events. You know, I like to watch football. I know Earl Wagner, he's a big football fan, aren't you, Earl? And he likes the Dallas Cowboys. And I remember years ago, I believe it was Tom Landry of the Cowboys, he said, they asked him, they said, well, why don't you pass more? Why don't you have a, you know, I think it was Troy Aikman, whoever it was at the time, a great quarterback and a passer, and why don't you have him pass more? And he said, well, the reason I don't is because there are three things that can happen when you pass the football, and two of them are bad. For those of you that don't understand football, you realize you can, you know, you miss the pass or it can be intercepted. You miss the pass, you lose the down. If it's intercepted, well, you're all kinds of problems. Then you lose the ball. But what happens if he catches the pass? Well, you've been successful, haven't you? But you know, there's the possibility of something bad happening. Now, if you're contemplating marriage, I want you to go in with it with your eyes open. And those of you that are already married, it's a little too late, but you need to realize it as well. There are four things that can happen, and three of them are bad. The first thing is that everything is hunky-dory, and your wife loves you, and your husband loves you, and you just live happily ever after, and he does a good job in his marriage, and as a husband, and as a provider, and you do a good job as a woman, and as a mother, and as also as a provider, and y'all just live happily ever after, and you die of an old age just a few hours apart. But the other three are not so good. First of all, you can be abandoned in a relationship, in a marriage. Your husband or your wife can just walk out the door and leave you and get a divorce. And did you know there is nothing you can do about it? And it may not be your fault at all. In fact, you may have done nothing wrong. I've seen marriage where devoted women did nothing wrong in the relationship. Or here's a devoted husband to his wife. He did nothing wrong. She's out the door. She's abandoned. Your spouse can die on you. With the world like it is, humanity like it is, God did not guarantee, and He does not guarantee, that we're going to live for a long time. In the kind of business I'm in, I bury all kinds of people and of all age groups. I buried a little teenage girl one time. I buried a little boy, 15 years old. How many of you boys around 15? Buried a little boy, 15 years old, killed in a hunting accident with his best friend. I buried a young mother in her late 30s who left a little crying child. I buried a young man in his late 20s. I buried multitudes of people in their 40s, which I thought when I was a young preacher, that man, that's old, you know, and you're getting your 40s. Well, you're about ready. You ought to be ready for dying. No. Just getting started in life. But you can experience the death of a spouse. That's the second bad thing. And then the third bad thing is that you can experience the disability, you know, of a spouse in sickness and in death. In divorce, we are abandoned by the one we love. In death, we are separated from the one we love. And in disability, we are deprived of the physical and financial support of the one that we love. And this is why that we must be prepared for better and for worse in our relationships, in marriage. And so conflict may not always be resolved. Or there may be no conflict, but there may be death or disability or all of the other things that can bring upon ourselves the sorrow that we may experience as a result of a relationship. And I know the poet said this, but even so we risk experiencing sorrow. It is better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all, is it not? And this is the way God has set things up, that we learn to love each other, that we have this relationship, that marriage is forever, and from death to you part. Find that person of your dreams, that person of your desire, and that relationship to cure the loneliness in your life. But keep in mind the things that we've talked about this morning in Family Foundations number 6, as well as the other 5 lessons. And maybe that will make your marriage strong, because a strong marriage means a strong church, does it not, Randy? All right, would you, Brother Preston, would you lead us in this song of encouragement if you'd like to respond to this invitation? If you'd like to obey the gospel, well, this will be the time that you can do that, to be baptized for the forgiveness of sins. We have a baptistry right behind there that will service you in that area. I know I haven't talked about the plan of salvation this morning, but I've talked about it at other times, and we'd be happy to help you there. Or if you need the prayers of the church, we have elders that can pray for you this morning in a public way. And whatever your need is, we ask you to come. All together we stand, and Randy, please come and lead us.